Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome everyone to this week's Onceable podcast, this Typeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. We're really excited to be here this week, and there's so many really fantastic storylines to talk about. Just a couple things before we get started. A reminder as to where you can send us emails and comments on the podcast and any of your theories and thoughts. You can reach us at Onceable, O-N-C-E-A-B-L-E, at Hypeable. hypable.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Once Upon News, which is where we post all of our fantastic news stories on Once Upon a Time. And you can leave comments on the forums or on any of the posts. So this week, I have with me Jess, Laura, and Karen, and we're really excited to talk about this week's episode. So we're going to start with a recap, which I organized a little bit differently this week because last week was really crazy with the three different kind of timelines and sequences and stuff. So essentially what I did this time is we're going to talk about one timeline at a time. So we'll talk about everything that happens in the Enchanted Forest, then everything that happens in Storybrooke, and then everything that happens in Flashback, so that hopefully it keeps all the thoughts kind of together and organized, because I know last week was a little crazy with all the different things we had to talk about. So this week recap, we're going to start with Emma and Snow, who are stuck in the lovely pit with Cora, who, while Snow is knocked down at the beginning, tries to start a conversation with Emma. Snow wakes up and realizes exactly who Cora is and tells Emma to stay away from her and not to trust her because she is 10 times worse than Regina ever could be. Cora says they have nothing to worry about, as all of her magic is gone. Then Snow and Emma get pulled out of the pit and brought to the leader of the camp, who just happens to be Lancelot. Snow knows Lancelot from when he served as a knight in King George's army. And this is the first section of flashbacks where we learn that Lancelot brought Snow to George. So then Snow believes that the tree portal where she first transported Emma as a baby may be the only way back to Storybrooke. They set off with Aurora and Mulan, who asks if Emma's gun is magic. Before they go, Lancelot warns them that the ogres are back. We learn that the ogres are blind creatures in Fairyland. In the middle of their journey, Emma fires her gun in an attempt to save Snow from Aurora's feeble attempt at avenging Philip. An ogre immediately comes out of the woods and breathes hot ogre breath on Emma. That was a really funny scene. Snow uses her archery skills to kill the ogre and get the ogre away from Emma. Snow and Emma finally reach their home where Emma was born and Snow had lived with Charming. And Emma's kind of taken aback by the whole scene of her room and a place that was built just for her because it's not something she's ever had. Soon after they're checking out the wardrobe, Lancelot arrives, but we quickly learn that it is not actually Lancelot, but Cora in the form of Lancelot. Cora tells us that the real Lancelot has been dead for years, and she has always had her powers, that she's never lost them. Cora traps both Snow and Emma using magic, and Emma breaks free of part of the magic, and in an attempt to distract Cora from hurting Snow, she lights the portal on fire, because clearly that's what Cora was there to get. Cora focuses on Emma and tries to harm Emma, but Mulan steps in and saves both Snow and Emma from Cora. Emma and Snow have a really nice bonding moment at the end, where Emma acknowledges that she knows her mother gave up everything for her, and a teary Snow sees a flashback of Emma's room from when she was born and how it used to be. All of them leave together. Aurora, Mulan, Snow, and Emma leave to head back to the outskirts and to, like, the refugee camp. And then we go into flashbacks, and the whole flashback scenario is we learn that Lancelot and Snow knew each other from when George was hunting Charming, and Lancelot captures Snow White and brings her to George, who gives her a poison that makes her infertile. That's his big revenge on Charming and Snow. We also see that Charming has gone to see his mom Ruth, where he is supposed to be waiting for Snow because they're supposed to meet up. It will be Snow's first chance to meet Ruth. Before Snow, who is accompanied by Lancelot, arrive at the cottage, Charming is attacked by George's soldiers. Ruth takes a poisoned arrow to the chest, and moments later, Snow and Lancelot arrive, and Lancelot says they must get her the magic water. So this means they return to the Lady of the Lake. So on the way, Ruth tells Snow about her necklace that predicts the future of your child. It was a gypsy pendant that was given to her, and she knew the sex of her twins before she had them due to this pendant. So when Ruth tries it on Snow, it doesn't work because Snow's been made infertile, and Ruth wants to find a way to help Snow so that she can have children because she thinks it's incredibly important. When they arrive at the lake is completely dried up. Lance and Charming start to look for any place where there may be water, and in the end they do find some water in a shell. Ruth wants Snow to drink the water, but Snow refuses because she wants Ruth to be well and alive with her and Charming. Ruth looks like she's drank the water and says, "Oh, I wish I could see the two of you married." Snow turns to Lancelot and asks him, as a knight of, or ex-knight of the Round Table, if he can marry them. So Lancelot marries Snow and Charming so that Ruth can see them married, and Ruth is still fading. She's not getting better, even though the water should have helped her. During the part of the ceremony, Snow and Charming both drink from a goblet or a cup of some sort, and in the end, when Charming goes to hand Snow the pendant that was Ruth's, it starts to move over her hand. So clearly Ruth and Lancelot had planned to switch the water so that Snow White drank the water and that she could have children again. So Charming buries his mother and they all head off. And that's kind of where the flashback scenes end. And what we get at the very end of the episode is we're back in Storybrooke, and we see George is alive and well, and he is in Storybrooke. The only other couple of moments we had in Storybrooke were one where Regina is packing up her office because she is no longer mayor. The people have asked her to step down, and she has agreed to do that from what we can tell. And we see a couple of moments with Charming and Henry, Henry trying to break into Regina's vault to find a way to get a portal made so he can get Emma and Snow back, and Charming teaching Henry how to use swords, to fight with a sword. The other moment we see is Henry convincing Jefferson that he needs to go and talk to his daughter, that his daughter will just want him back no matter what. It won't matter that he left her in the first place. So we see Jefferson have a reunion with his daughter. And that kind of sums up the episode in the three different storylines that we see and the things that we see happening during those storylines. So, ladies, what were your initial reactions to this episode? Did you love it? Did you hate it? How did you feel about it?
I think it was probably my favorite one so far. I don't know if anybody else felt like that, but it was definitely one of my absolute favorites.
I don't know where it ranks on like my list, but I really, really enjoyed this episode. I loved getting to see the old Snow back taking charge and all of the tender moments that we had with the kids and just all of the moments with the children and their parents. It was just really great. And I really, really liked this episode a lot.
Yeah, this was definitely my favorite one so far too. Everything that I really wanted to see in the last episode that we didn't get to see, I saw in this one. We spent a lot of time in the Enchanted Forest, and I really liked that. It was also just really, really funny. There were so many good one-liners in this one.
I liked it. I don't know if it ranks as one of my favorite episodes, but I really loved the way it connected all the family stuff together. I thought that was a really important thing to do, to kind of connect the children to the parents. And in all three timelines, we saw a lot of that. And I thought that was really important. I thought it was really well done. And I did really, really enjoy kind of seeing Snow in her element again. And I even enjoyed more seeing Emma watch her mother handle herself and everything else going on. Because Emma has really only known Mary Margaret, who is so different from Snow White. So I thought that part was really enjoyable as well. Did you guys have any favorite lines? I know, Karen, you said you like the one-liners and some of the funny comments. Can you think of any that really stood out to you?
Oh my God, the turducken one. I cackled. That one was like the best line in the whole episode.
That was a great line. Yeah.
It's hilarious.
That was definitely my favorite. But I also really liked the one when Charming was like, "We will not run with our tails between our legs." And just the look on Red's face was, oh my God, I died.
Those were good. Does anyone else have any favorite quotes from this or favorite lines that they really liked?
Mine was, without question, Snow channeling her inner Molly Weasley. And I mean, you know what I mean, right? Because she's like, yo, yes. Troll, not my daughter. Like, I loved that. Just, yeah, Snow totally channeling her inner Molly Weasley to take out the troll. And it was like, to me, I know it's an ogre, but I just kept thinking, like, literally, did anybody else just kept thinking, troll in the dungeon?
Yes. So great.
Yeah, it had, this is what, the second item now that may have been borrowed a little bit from a certain movie. But yes, I thought that too.
I loved all those other lines. I can't remember any specific lines, but there were a lot of stuff like that. One line that I loved that wasn't so funny, I don't know, just the allusion to everything, but when Snow was asking Lancelot what happened with him in the round table, and he was said something to the effect of, what always happens, there was a woman involved or something like that. And I just loved having that allusion to the whole Arthurian legend, which I love.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice touch too. The whole kind of, it's always about a woman, isn't it?
The one other one that I really liked was when Mulan looks at Princess Aurora and kind of like just kind of lets her know where it's at about, as far as, you know, about what vengeance is, and make sure you know what you're doing for the right reason. I thought that was, I know I'm just sort of paraphrasing it at best, but I thought that was a really, really crucial moment that she just cut to the heart of it in a couple of words, and I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, Mulan is a very strong character, and I enjoy watching her interact with Aurora, because Aurora doesn't have any kind of knowledge of the world that she's in at the moment, and she doesn't know how to handle herself quite yet. But I think it'll be really interesting to see how she kind of comes through and turns it around a little bit. So to start off the discussion, why don't we start off with Korra? Because this was an episode where we learned a lot about Korra, I think, and about maybe some of the things that she's after. So what did you guys think about Korra and her, oh, I'm so innocent, I have no magic? Did you guys believe her up front, or did you have suspicions?
I didn't know if she had magic or not. I did kind of assume that she didn't, and that's why she was still stuck down in there. But I was, like, yelling at my TV, like, don't trust her, because I knew she had something up her sleeve, or she was going to trick Emma into doing something. So I was really glad that Snow woke up right when she did to warn Emma not to trust her.
Yeah, I was the same way. I kind of felt like maybe she really didn't have magic, but I did not trust her for a second at all. But I was completely taken aback when it was revealed that she was Lancelot shapeshifted. Like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, after looking at it, I mean, I figured if she had any magic, she would have gotten out of there. But I remember, like, once we had the big reveal, the first thing that came to my mind is, okay, so how long has this been going on? Because I felt like she probably overpowered Lancelot at a very specific point in time. Like, I don't feel like she was, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel like she just took him over instantaneously. I feel like it must have happened at a certain point, so I'm curious at what point she was able to get the upper hand on Lancelot and shapeshift or do whatever she does.
Well, it's also interesting to think that, you know, with her, she does the shapeshift into Lancelot, but where does she get her magic from? Because from everything I think we've learned in the past about her, her magic always comes out of her book. She doesn't have her book. Regina does.
Unless it's some other object or something on her, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, because I think in most of the episodes we've seen with Korra, she's always had the book to read out of and use the spells out of. So I think it's interesting that Regina has the book, but Korra still has magic. Strong enough magic to shapeshift into someone else.
I feel like we've seen her use magic without the book. Am I wrong? I don't know. I feel like we saw her do some things without having the book at hand to read from. I just thought it was like kind of like with Regina, where that is where she initially learned and got her power, and then was able to continue using it without the book directly.
In the Stable Boy, that flashback with Regina when she first meets Snow, I don't think Cora had the book then, did she?
I don't think she did.
So maybe it's just a thing where, like, you know, you use magic enough, you get strong enough or something, and then you don't need the book anymore, maybe?
That's kind of the take that I had taken on it.
That's all very quite possible. I just remember the last episode that she had her book, and she was reading into the book in order to make the vines. Like, it was a spell she cast with the book. And then it worked, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? So that, I guess that's what was fresh in my mind as I was thinking about it. Okay, so moving on to the next kind of topic, in order of how the show presented things to us, we can see Snow's relationship with Lancelot. She's very happy to see him. He's happy to see her. So what do we think about that in regards to that was actually Cora?
Yeah, I think, like I said before, the biggest thing in my mind is, so when did this start? I mean, I feel like Mulan, or maybe I'm making an assumption, but I feel like Mulan only knew Lancelot post, you know, the disaster or whatever you want to call it, when the curse came on. So I feel like, I don't know that Cora is, like, that good. Like, I feel like, Lancelot had to have a lot of, like, really good qualities and consistent good qualities for Mulan to be following him and to be so trusting in him, because she seems like a pretty astute person. So, I don't know. I guess my biggest question is still when, like, at what point did this start? I'm also curious if Lancelot is maybe, like, alive somewhere. Like, if she's just inhabiting, like, his body and he's alive somewhere. I don't know. That might be cool, because I really like the actor who played that a lot. So, I don't know. That's my thought.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, actually, because Cynqua Walls is the guy who plays him, and he did the live tweet during the episode, and he said, but is Lancelot really dead? And so now I'm kind of wondering if maybe he's alive somewhere.
I really hope he's not. I mean, not for nothing, but it's nice to have a little racial diversity going on in this show. So it was really nice to have, like, a non-Caucasian actor having a really good part. I mean, there's also, obviously, Mulan is another non-Caucasian actor, but I feel like we haven't been incredibly diverse here in Storybrooke. I really like the fact that we have some diversity going on.
Well, you do also have to have the person alive to make Polyjuice potion, so...
Well, I was also thinking, true. How would Cora know the mem? Because Cora, the reason Snow knew that it was Cora and not Lancelot was because Emma told Cora Henry's name. But how would Cora have all of Lancelot's memories if she could
memories?
How else would she know that he and Snow knew each other and what their relationship was? Because when they greet each other in the beginning, clearly Lancelot knows it's Snow White and says, if I knew it was you, I never would have had you in the pit. I would have come gotten you sooner. And, like, there's this big conversation. So that's the part that kind of confused me, because I was kind of like, if she's killed him, how did she maintain his memories?
Did they actually discuss any details of their relationship with one another, or was it just a general, like, we know each other and we're friends and happy to see each other?
Kind of general, but it was intense enough to know that you would have to know that they knew each other well. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know if Cora would have that information, because she had been pushed through the looking glass ages before that.
Right. The only thing, if she didn't somehow had that specific information, is if she was just kind of, it could have been based on things that she had learned of Lancelot and the things that he did before she killed him, or she was just making an assumption that he and Snow knew each other, a deduction based on what information she had, and was taking a gamble. I don't know.
Plus, like, Cora's manipulative too. I mean, as you said, she got pushed through the looking glass fairly early on, you know, before Regina really came to power. Very absolutely, when Snow was a little girl, she got pushed through. So chances are, you know, Lancelot didn't really know Cora very well. I mean, she could have been could have been pretending to be anybody, you know, and then maybe just twisting and gathering information and then waiting for her moment. So maybe she made sure she knew a lot about him before she took him over or whatever it is that she did.
That's true, because, I mean, it had been 25 years and she says that he's been dead for years. Well, I mean, even if, like, let's say she killed him 5 years and has been impersonating him for 5 years, that's still 20 potential years that she had to gather information.
Or we can just assume that that's how the magic works and whatever spell she casts, you know, gives her his memories or something like that.
Yeah, there's that too. I thought it was just an odd thing because memories are so very specific sometimes when you know what I mean? They're within the person, but it doesn't mean because you shift into that person, you get their memories too. So it was one of those things I was curious about. We know that Snow and Lancelot meet because he is sent after Charming, basically, to corral Charming for King George, who's still a little bit bitter about him not marrying his daughter. He's got a little bit of, not his daughter, I'm sorry, about him not marrying Midas's daughter. So King George is still after Charming constantly, and Lancelot is basically a hired sword. He's a disgraced knight of the Round Table. And he goes and he actually sees Snow take off and decides that he's going to capture Snow because it's just as worthy as capturing Charming. So he captures her and brings her to King George, whose revenge is to make her drink a potion that will make her infertile, which is the exact same potion that his wife drank and why they couldn't have children and they went and took the twins from Ruth. So what did you guys think about that? That's kind of a vicious revenge plot, really, in a way.
Like, huge, huge circle. Like, it even made you kind of, like, dizzy thinking about it. I have one question that's kind of related to that, though, because, you know, as they're talking about, you know, like, him trying to get out of the marriage, like, that's he really wants to be with Snow, and we all know that Midas's daughter, like, kind of sees it as a marriage of convenience, too. She's really in love with the guy who obviously was turned to gold. Didn't he, Charming, say about, like, when they went to the lake, oh, there's this lake, it has many, many magical properties, I know it could help us, I once saw it turn a man who was gold, like, back human or something like that. And I was like, wait a minute, did we actually see that? Because clearly that's got to be the fiancé of Midas's daughter. Am I just not remembering it? But did we not see that?
Yeah, we saw that.
Okay.
And we saw him battle the siren when he was in the lake and kill her and all
that
kind of stuff.
I was just having a total, like, memory gap there.
Yeah.
Okay.
We saw, and because he killed her when he went to get the water for Catherine, that's why the lake dried up.
Got it. Okay, I have to go back and rewatch because I was just having a total memory gap there. Okay, that makes sense then.
So yeah, it was kind of a full circle thing with the poison, and it was really rather vicious.
It really was. Like, I mean, King George has been annoying this whole time, like trying to get his way, but this was taking it to a whole nother level of cruelty. You know what I mean? Like, especially because we know in the timeline, this is after Charming has helped Catherine, was that her name? Get her beloved back by getting him turned human out of being gold. So, like, she was, like, there was no animosity, you know, between the two. Like, the princess was happy, so it's not like her dad was pissed at him still or anything like that. And just the level of cruelty that he took this to for his own personal revenge just was crazy.
Right. Plus, like, the last shot of the episode is we see him, like, staring out the window of the car at Henry and Charming, and you're like, I wonder what this guy is going to be up to now. I mean, clearly his daughter has got to be there in the present. You would think he might be happy, like, seeking out his own daughter, but he's obviously he just looked bitter there, too, like, really staring at them. It makes you wonder why, and is he going to do something to Henry?
Yeah, I have a really bad feeling about that. I think Henry's going to get caught in the middle of it.
And I think it's interesting, too, that this was the episode where we had that chat between Mulan and Aurora about her desire for revenge and the anger that she has within her, what was taken from her. And then we kind of see through King George, like, what can become of that if you let it fester and build out of control, and like how bad that can become.
Yeah, and I guess the thing with King George is that it wasn't really anything horrible that happened. You know, Charming didn't kill anybody. Charming, he was just trying to take the place of his dead brother, essentially. And he made a choice for love, not because Catherine didn't love him either in the past. You know what I mean? So it's complicated, but clearly George was all about Midas's gold. So we also get to see Snow meet Ruth for the first and sadly the last time. What did you guys think about that? And like Snow actually getting to almost have a mother figure and what that meant to Snow and how kind of that played out. What did you guys think?
I immediately felt bad for Henry. I was like, oh, like I know he's like we're joking around and he's calling, you know, charming gramps and stuff like that. But, you know, age gap being what it is. I mean, he's just so much more like a father figure to him than like a grandfatherly type. I really wanted him to have like somebody who could be like grandma to him in, you know, in the present in Storybrooke. And obviously that opportunity is not going to be there because she's dead.
I just thought the whole dynamic between the two of them was very sweet and very touching. And it's a shame that they didn't have a chance to nurture that relationship, because it seems like it would have been a really good relationship between mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, which is not often the case. And it was just really sweet. And you could see the love that Ruth held for her son and, you know, how she just wanted him to be happy, you know, would do anything for him. And so I thought it was very, very touching.
Were you guys surprised by the fact that Ruth got shot, or did you guys sort of had a bad feeling that it was coming? Because I sort of accidentally saw a set photo a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, when I was covering the news for Selena for a little bit there. And so I totally knew this moment was coming, and it was kind of ruined for me.
I mean, I still had like the reaction of, oh no, when you saw it, but I think the foreshadowing was there to know that something wasn't going to be good.
Yeah, as soon as he says, go in the house, mother, you know that mother is not going to stay in the house or go in the house. It never works that way. If you say, run towards the arrow, mother, you've got a much better shot of her going the other direction. Because, I mean, that's just how it always, you know, almost always plays out, is that accidents happen. She was there. She got hurt. And it was so sad to watch her, because you knew for once she could have had her son and he was happy and they could have had grandchildren and everything that would have kind of fulfilled Ruth's life. Because I feel like in a lot of ways she gave up both of her sons to this king who was an awful person, and she was just going to get them back and be able to have that family again. And then she kind of lost it all in a sense. So it was a very sad moment. It was sad for Charming to lose his mother. And it was really sad for Snow, who first gets to meet her and actually feel like she could have a mother figure in her life, to lose her so quickly as well.
It was definitely tragic.
Yeah, it had a lot of tragedy going on with that kind of one storyline. It was a very, very sad time. But I do, and I guess I kind of, did you guys kind of see the fact that Ruth was going to switch the water out and Snow was absolutely going to get the water?
Yeah, my first thought when they like had that argument and then they gave her the water and she just kind of was like, eh, and put the thing up to her mouth, I was like, there's no way she drank that so easily after being so adamant about not drinking it. So I was like, there's something up her sleeve. She's doing something here.
Yeah, it was kind of, then as soon as I saw the cup of water, or the goblet of water, with Lancelot and Snow drank first, I was like, oh, sneaky, sneaky. Not really. Kind of obvious, but we'll go with it this time. So yeah, so I think it was interesting that Ruth went, you know, kind of asked Lancelot to help her and to be sneaky about it. I thought that was a really interesting thing to kind of incorporate him in that way, because he's still clearly, for a disgraced knight, he still has a lot of honor about him. So it was a really interesting thing to see. Okay, so moving on, we get a lot of Emma in this episode being a little bit surprised by the things in the Enchanted Forest. She is not 100% prepared to be in a place where fairy tales are real, like in the world where they exist, not in her world where the people exist, which is a little bit different. So we get this moment where, you know, we get the Turducken comment about the chimera that she's supposed to be having for dinner, and then we kind of get the reaction of Snow being able to shoot an ogre through the eye with an arrow, and seeing Snow just be really, really strong and in her element and in her environment, whereas before Emma's only seen this Mary Margaret version of Snow, which is completely the opposite, really. So what did you guys think about how Emma handled herself in the Enchanted Forest and how, like, her reactions to her mother?
This plot was my favorite part of the episode. I loved everything about it, because, I mean, I think that Emma kind of had to see this. She had to see Snow in her world, in her element, in her environment to understand. Because, you know, in the premiere, when she finds out that Mary Margaret really is her mother, really is Snow White, she has that reaction of such anger, I don't care, you abandoned me, you gave me up. And she was so angry about it. And so I think that it had to be something this severe to show her that, no, your parents really did love you and were doing what was best for you. And I loved seeing the evolution of her attitude throughout the episode, where at first she's used to being the one strong and in charge, and now all of a sudden this character that she's seen as being kind of weak from Storybrooke is the one who is like kicking butt left and right. And to see her first like confidence and then it being shattered and then the confusion until she just finally surrendered to the reality of the situation. I loved it. I thought it was a beautiful progression.
Yeah, I agree. I loved a lot of the different things that played out in that storyline this week.
I really liked it too. Emma's probably one of my all-time favorite characters on the show, but it was really nice to see her sort of knocked down a few pegs. She's so used to being independent and only relying on herself that she really kind of had to give herself over to Snow and even Mulan, you know, because she was so out of her element. And it was funny seeing her like that and seeing her, you know, completely out of her element. But at the same time, I think it was a really, like you said, just she needed that, and she needed to learn that there are other people out there who can take care of her and will take care of her, and not everybody's going to leave her like she thinks they will.
And even, you know, at the beginning when they were warning her of the danger, she was like, I killed a dragon. Like, this is no big deal. I can handle this. And then for her, like you said, to be taken down a few pegs, like, it kind of needed to happen.
You know what it reminded me of a little bit? Like, kind of like Henry getting overconfident and, like, wanting to help and wanting to be in a situation that, you know, he's got all the enthusiasm in the world, all, like, his heart in the right place. He just doesn't have the skill set. And I felt like it was really the same kind of thing for Emma. I mean, it was really funny. Like, she was actually really going to be like a child for Mary Margaret, who's got to teach her, no, you got to aim for the eye socket, or, you know, or no, she wasn't really threatening me with the knife here. Learn what that looks like. You know, I thought it was a very good experience for everybody this time.
And speaking of threatening with a knife, let's talk a little bit about Aurora, who, being this princess who's kind of lost out of place in time, I feel, because she doesn't know what's been going on for the last 28 years. She just lost her prince. So, like, she's kind of in this big upheaval of relearning who she is in a lot of ways. So what did you guys think about Aurora? I'll be honest, I actually liked her more because she had the guts to attack Snow because she was angry and she's hurt, and she was trying to find a way to rectify that, because I didn't quite think she had it in her, to be honest, when we first met her.
Yeah, Aurora confuses me a little bit. I can't really figure out if I like her or not, because on the one end, she's so full of this anger and she's very, like, independent, and that works sometimes, but then she goes to the other extreme, and I feel like she, you know, she's this high and mighty princess, and she has to rely on other people to take care of her, and I kind of want her to be one or the other, and I can't really decide which one I like better, although this episode, like you said, I did enjoy her attacking Snow, oddly enough, just because I think it was nice seeing her like that, just seeing her more independent and more, you know, assured.
Laura, Aurora's always kind of your favorite. You always tell us she is your favorite princess. Any thoughts on her character this week?
I was actually happy she didn't turn out to be incredibly, like, totally whiny and totally self-centered, because I was a little concerned that she was going to be a little too superficial, frankly. And kind of what I liked about Aurora in the movie is that she is kind of very grounded and down to earth. She doesn't know that she's a princess, like, for the longest time, and she's cooking and sweeping and doing all sorts of things. And I just felt like originally, like, she was a little too self-centered, and I thought, oh, am I really not going to like her as a character? But I felt like she was very capable of learning from her mistakes, so I was like, okay, I can go with this. Jury's still out, but I definitely want to see how this develops.
That pretty much echoes my thoughts exactly. I did not think I was going to like her at all, but she does seem to be able to learn from her mistakes, which is really the best trait that somebody can have.
Well, I liked that how at the end of the episode, she kind of says, you know, well, we need to do something because I need to find a place to channel my anger and my rage and stuff against something. So she's kind of ready to get in there and fight and to put her anger and her regrets and things focused on something other than Snow White. She's willing to let that go, it looks like, and focus on something else. So I think it'll be really interesting to see where they take her character next and what kind of happens with her character as she develops through her anger and her, you know, sorrow and all the things that she's feeling over the loss of Philip and how she utilizes that.
And can we just say how cool Snow looked flipping her over like that?
Yes. Oh my goodness.
It was really cool seeing her like this kick-ass, you know, that we've seen in the past, but really go at it again. I really like that.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Karen, because that moment was awesome. I'm pretty sure I cheered and like did a fist pump.
Oh, I love it. So we had another battle. We had Battle Cora going on in basically Emma's baby room when they went back to where Snow and Charming used to live. So kind of Cora turns up as Lancelot and, oh, surprise, it's really Cora all disguised, and she's got all kinds of magic powers. She kind of throws both Snow and Emma against a wall and holds them there with magic, and she's kind of really going for it. Even though she doesn't know how to use the portal, she definitely wants to use the portal to go back and see her daughter, which I think is an interesting thing. So many places that could go. What did you guys think about Cora with her magic? Is she still as scary as she was in all the other flashbacks we've seen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Snow said it the best. It's like, however scary you think Regina is, she is 10 times worse. Like, I really feel like we haven't even begun to hit the tip of the iceberg yet. Like, at least with Regina, you got to feel like she truly loves Henry and she has something redeeming about her, or Gold. Like, you feel like he at least genuinely did love, like, his son and genuinely does love Belle. But I feel like with Cora, there's nothing redeeming. Like, she's just a psychopath. Like, there's nothing redeeming there at all. Like, she wanted Regina to succeed at things, but I feel like she wanted her to succeed because it was glorious and it was another element of power, not because she really loved her daughter, just that she wanted to live off the residual glory.
I think that's very true. Cora seems to be all about power. She's consumed by it in a lot of ways. And at times we have seen Regina that way, but we've also seen Regina be able to pull back and be about more than power. So I think it'll be interesting, should the two meet again, which I think is all on our horizon, to see how that plays out, because that is going to be a fantastic showdown, I have a feeling. So when we have Battle Cora, we also have Mulan / Emma saving the day. And what happens is Emma, unfortunately, has to burn down their one chance, their one portal, because it's the only way she can get Cora to stop killing her mother. So she burns the portal. So what do we think happens next? Is that the only way? Is there another possible portal that they could use anywhere in the Enchanted Forest?
I'm sure they'll find something. I mean, there's got to be some way for them to get back or for the others to get there. I don't know what, but I'm sure there's something there.
Yeah, I feel like we've only just sort of scratched the surface as far as we know on, like, the lore of the Enchanted Forest. So same thing. I feel like there's definitely something, like, you know, Snow can turn around in a second and go, oh, there's the old legend of, and just fill it in. So I feel like Emma may not know what it is, but the possibilities are definitely there.
And what about Cora collecting the ash? Can she make a portal out of ash? Is she that powerful? Because that part, I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. They had to take the ash with them in order for Cora to not get anything out of it? This is so not okay. So I'm kind of curious as to what she's going to do with the ash in order to make it work. Because she seemed pretty excited that she had ash left.
Yeah, whether or not that's a portal or it just has magical properties that can enable her to do something else, that's true too. But I was just kind of surprised that she didn't sort of think of going there on her own. But then again, she was locked up in a mirror, so maybe she didn't know of what the plans were or anything. So who knows?
Very true. So what do we think? This is like one of our big times to like come up with crazy theories. What does Cora want with Regina? I mean, besides the obvious, does she want revenge? Does she want them to be like evil cohorts? What does she want with Regina?
I feel like she probably, it's a mixture of just wanting revenge for what she did to her, but also of wanting to get her back under her thumb, like a matter of pride that she lost the control she wielded over her daughter. And I imagine that she's going to want to get that back no matter what she has to do to get her to that point where she wants power again and will pursue that. Because I feel like the fact that Regina turned against her and did everything against what she said was a huge blow to her pride. And for somebody like Cora, like that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think her plan is going to be twofold, because to get revenge and to get Regina back on her side, I have a feeling Henry's going to be caught in the middle there somewhere. And I mean, I don't really know what she has planned, but that would be a perfect way to get back at Regina. And Cora sort of has this effect on Regina. We saw in the one episode where she was daydreaming about killing Snow, and Regina said, "My mother's making me crazy." So I think she holds some sort of power, some sort of manipulation over Regina, and I wouldn't be surprised if Henry ended up being in the middle of that at some point.
I kind of want to see a Regina Cora like battle royal with magic, because I feel like Regina is just, when she's consumed by it, she's just as evil and hurtful as her mother ever was. So I would love to see how that would play out. Like, I really would.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that if Cora threatens Henry, like I suspect, just like Karen said, that she would, that that'll definitely pull the mama bear claws out of Regina and make her go no holds barred against Cora. And that would be something incredible to see.
Yeah, and you kind of have to wonder where Rumpelstiltskin's going to be in the middle of this. Is he just going to let the two of them go at it, or is he going to take sides so that, you know, the person he wants to win will win?
Well, and one thing I was wondering too is Cora, I mean, I imagine that she would be, but is Cora aware that Rumpel is the one who provided Regina with the looking glass that she pushed her through, and what kind of plans does she have in store for him if so?
Yeah, that's a good question, because Cora could bring a whole nother level of kind of revenge to this whole idea of what's been going on between people. Like, she's like the ultimate, because she's got Rumpel in her sights, she's got Regina in her sights, and so really, the two kind of antagonists of last season have now become kind of these targets, in a sense, if Cora gets back into Storybrooke, because I think those are the people she would be focused on, due to how they affected her life. So I think it'd be really interesting to see how that would play out. And again, it would be a magic, like, festival of crazy. I love it. So a couple of other points that we saw besides the whole Cora, Regina, Snow White, all that good stuff we saw, were some things back in Storybrooke. They were really kind of minor. We didn't really have a lot of Storybrooke this episode, which was kind of nice. So we got to see more of Snow and Emma and the other characters and see what was going on with them. But we see Regina stepping down from being mayor. Basically, she has the power to be like, no, I'm not stepping down, I'm staying. But the people asked her to, so she has agreed to kind of pack up and go peacefully, which is so anti the Regina that we've known for so long. So how did you guys feel about seeing that scene and watching her kind of just go like, oh, they asked me to leave, I'm packing up, I'm going?
This episode definitely made me believe even more her pursuit of redemption. If she has some kind of ulterior motive, then she's definitely playing the long game, because everything she did this episode pointed towards her trying to heal the relationship with her and Henry. The fact that when she realized what Henry had done, she called Charming instead of going after him herself, you know, was fostering that. And like you said, was stepping down without argument, when she could easily just like snap her fingers and be like, nope, I'm staying in power. But she's not doing that. So I feel like she was actually sincere when she said that she wanted to try to make things right.
I agree with that totally, because I feel like this is the only time we've seen Regina talking to Henry when there's not another party there, and that includes Henry. Like, when she's talking to Henry, like, she's still trying to get him to do things her way. There's a certain level of manipulation there. You saw her on the phone, and you saw her totally facially react genuinely. Like, of course, Henry, I swear I'll be there. I'll drop anything. Nothing's that important for you. Like, there's, you know, she could fake it. Like, if there's no one there to impress, like, she could be fake sweet on the phone and you'd read it on her face. But to me, I felt like it was so absolutely genuine. So I totally agree with you that she, this is for me, the very first sign that she was much more on the road to redemption than I had given her credit for before this time.
Yeah, and I actually felt really bad for her this episode. She's trying so hard, and then, you know, Henry tricked her and didn't go to lunch with her, and I actually felt really bad for her. I was like, no, Henry, make sure you're there, but, you know, he never showed up. But she didn't seem all that mad at him, you know, when she sort of, from what Charming said about not wanting to be there because she knew that Henry wouldn't go with them. But yeah, I felt really bad for her this episode.
Did anyone else think it was odd that Charming and Regina are both like, oh, Henry's in the vault, it's no big deal, go get him before he gets hurt, and that Charming didn't really think twice about Regina having a vault full of magical things and kind of just picked up Henry and toddled off? Like, wasn't that an odd thing?
Yeah, I thought Charming was going to be a lot more mad than that. I would have been. I mean, who knows what's down there?
But don't you think he also would have been more curious about what's down there? Because she clearly has magical elements down there. There could be something that could be a portal that could get him back to the others.
I just felt like he wasn't going to explore it with Henry around. That was like his line in the sand. Like, his biggest priority was get Henry out of there, and then he'd worry about it later. Like, I don't think he dropped that by any means, but he had to make it less interesting to Henry, and he did that by getting out of there.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, too.
Okay, because I was just like, wouldn't you want to go back at least, Charming, to look around anything? No? Okay. And then, of course, we see the really kind of touching moment where David is teaching, or Charming, excuse me, I'm still stuck between the names, where Charming is teaching Henry how to sword fight at the end so that he can have, like, his usefulness, because for Henry, he needs to feel like he's able to do something. Charming teaches him how to sword fight, which was kind of a really sweet moment. It makes you wonder what Charming would have done with Emma if he had her to grow up with him, or her to grow up with them as parents, how he would be as an actual father. So I thought that was a really kind of sweet, tender moment. Of course, it's ruined by George's ominous glare out of the car windshield, but we still have this sweet moment.
I liked it. I thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was a neat bonding kind of thing, and I think it's actually really necessary. I think at some point Henry is going to probably end up back in the Enchanted Forest, and he's going to have to know, at least on some level, what to do with a sword.
And I think it's good for Henry too, because he doesn't really have a parent figure that he trusts all that much at the moment around him, so I think it's nice for him to not only have like a parent figure, but to have a male parent figure, which is very different for him. He's had kind of two moms the whole time, which for him has been kind of challenging, because he views one, in, you know, as a strong person that's good, and the other has a strong person who's technically the evil queen. So I think he has a little bit of conflict about how he should feel about both of them, because one he's grown up with, one he hasn't, kind of thing. So I thought it was nice that way for him too. Right before this, we also get another kind of really sappy, sad moment when we get Jefferson, who decides he can reunite with Grace, that he can go in and kind of own the fact that he left her and see her again, and that he hopes that she won't be mad, which she isn't. She's super excited to see her dad. So that was kind of a really nice moment as well with Jefferson. What did you guys think about that?
I was complete and total mush when that reunion happened. I was just like, oh, my heart was melting, and it was just perfect and beautiful. I mean, this poor man who has been driven completely mad by what Regina did to him and the separation that he had from his daughter, and then was brought here where he should have been able to forget and not even know that he had a missing daughter. He was plagued with his real memories, and to see him finally get to see her, and It was perfect.
I loved that Henry was the one who really kind of told him to get his, you know, get his head out of his ass. I really enjoyed that Henry just kind of delivered that message and said, look, I should know better than anybody. You just, you know, she wants, you know, she'll want to see you. She wants to meet you, or the questions are never going to end. I thought it was so awesome that Henry kind of was the one just to tell him, this is what you've got to do, and this is why you've got to do it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I really loved the reunion and everything, but I loved Henry's lecture. He's so wise beyond his years, and I'm glad he kind of, you know, called Jefferson out on that and told him that he knows from experience what it feels like, and it's not, you know, it's not good. It's better to have somebody, even if your relationship is, you know, kind of strained, than nobody at all.
Yeah, I did really like Henry kind of being the adult in the situation and telling him, you need to do this for your daughter, not even for you, but for her, because she should have the choice, and she may want, you know, she may want you back, and you have to be ready to be back for her. So I thought that was a really cool kind of way to have them reunite, was through Henry's help.
I had one thing that I wanted to bring up that I thought was interesting. When we were back getting the whole Lady of the Lake sequence, and the lake is dried up, and what was left was that little tiny shell with the water sitting into it, which looked really like a seashell. I thought that was kind of odd in what I assumed was like a freshwater lake, and I was wondering if there was maybe like a Little Mermaid tie-in going to happen in some way there. I don't know.
Wasn't her headdress made out of shell as well?
In the Disney movie, yes.
No, I mean, in... But when Charming first gets there, he picks up the siren's like headdress, and he says, oh, this is what's left. I killed her, and when I killed her, the lake dried up. Wasn't that made of shells as well?
Oh, I don't remember. Maybe. I think you're probably right. It probably was.
Not that I am opposed to a Little Mermaid tie-in, because we do have the hint of that Ursula-like character that may come later in the season, but I don't think it was taken into consideration that there were... Because her headdress was shells, too. So unless they imported them all from the ocean somewhere. Last week's poll was, who will be this season's villain? And by an overwhelming number of votes, we're talking like 60% of the votes, Cora is this season's villain, at least according to you guys as voters. Which I think we all agree on, that Cora definitely has the potential to be the villain of the season.
Yeah.
So this week's poll, we're going to focus on Cora again, but we're going to focus on Cora and that dust that she collected from, the ash that she collected from the leftover portal. So what do we think Cora is going to do with the ash? Is it going to be able to be made into a portal? Is it going to be used for magical elements? Or is it just some lovely ash that she's going to keep in a jar on her shelf? Because, well, she's Cora, we never know. So we will put up that poll. Make sure you guys get your thoughts in on what she could possibly be doing with that bottle of ash she collected at the end of the episode. And we're going to talk a little bit about next week's episode. So if you don't want to hear anything about next week's episode, now would be the time to plug your ears. So next week's episode is called Crocodile, which I'm so excited about. We get to see some more new characters, which is always really fun. The official description that was released from ABC is, Belle threatens to leave Mr. Gold if he doesn't change his ways. The dwarves try to find fairy dust in the Storybrooke mine. Rumpelstiltskin tries to save his wife from a band of pirates. Now, we also have learned that the Rumpelstiltskin part with the wife is all in flashback. Rumpel's wife Mila was kidnapped by Captain Hook, and then we learn that in present-day Storybrooke, Smee kidnaps Belle. So again, I feel like we're getting kind of this full-circle storyline for some of the characters. So clearly, Captain Hook has a beef with Rumpel. That's all I'm saying. Because he wants Rumpel's women. I don't know why, I don't know how, I don't know what his deal is, but he's clearly not happy with Rumpelstiltskin. Do you guys agree with that? Do you think that's probably pretty accurate?
Yeah, and it's just obviously so post, I mean not post, but it's obviously so pre-magic Rumpel. I mean, he clearly looked like meek and terrified and very tortured there, so yeah.
Yes, it'll be very interesting. Another piece of news, just really quickly, where we're talking about Crocodile, which is basically a story for Hook. Colin O'Donoghue, who plays Captain Hook, was recently kind of promoted to season regular already. So his episode hasn't even aired, and he is a season regular. So it'll be really interesting to see what role he begins to play in all of this if he's so quickly become a series regular. It's really a curious thing. I can't wait to see what happens with
him. Yeah, like, he's got to have some really good dynamic or really good chemistry there, because I'm just thinking both Megan Ori, who plays Red, and Emily Draven, who plays Belle, that they're, like, to me, like, they're both very dynamic actresses, and it took them a while to get to the status of series regular, so I feel like he must have just gelled really quickly, and they were like, yep, definitely keeping him around to promote him that quickly and to keep going with the storyline. But the other thing I'm curious too, did anybody else feel like he had a little bit of like a Captain Jack Sparrow sort of swagger about them? I almost swore I heard like Captain Jack Sparrow, like Pirates of the Caribbean music, like underscoring some of that section on the promos too.
Well, again, we're looking at a Disney themed kind of element there, so it wouldn't be surprising if they kind of fed into that as well. And he definitely has Captain Jack's eye makeup, so you know.
Yeah, he's got the guy liner going on.
So it'll be really interesting. I'm really excited for the episode to kind of see how Rumple's past plays into kind of his future in a sense, and how that all works out. I'm really excited to see where they're going to go with this Captain Hook. You know, because we got that teaser in the very beginning where we see him breaking into Mr. Gold's shop to steal back his hook. So I think it'll be a really cool thing to see how it all works itself out. Okay, so that kind of wraps up our discussion for today, for this episode. So I think we're going to move right into the listener feedback.
Okay, first one's from Tara. She says, just a quick comment on something you talked about in episode 6. You mentioned that Rumple knew about the curse the whole time. I heard an interview with Horowitz and Kitsis on another podcast, and they said Rumple didn't remember the curse until Emma told him her name. I thought this was very interesting to the whole dynamic and why things didn't escalate sooner. What do you all think? Also, thank you for pointing out the coffin in the mine. I totally missed that. I can't wait to see if you guys were right about all the items underground having something to do with the Enchanted Forest location, or if that is the way back.
So what do you guys think about that? About him not remembering anything until he heard Emma's name?
That's a really interesting twist. And it does kind of explain why he wasn't more active in trying to create mischief prior to that.
I think it also explains why he was unwilling to cross the line. Because remember, like, last week we were talking about, well, if Gold, you know, was playing to a cover story but clearly knew who he was, how bad would it have been for him just to cross over the line? Well, now we understand he wasn't in on it for a really long time, so he would have a lot to lose by crossing that line. He would just go back to being Mr. Gold. So that totally explains why he did not cross the line and was very frustrated with that.
Absolutely.
Yes, it does clarify a few things. I think that's a really great point that I didn't know before. I hadn't realized it before because, you know, you watch those episodes so long ago, sometimes you don't remember, especially because we weren't podcasting. I wasn't thinking about it as detailed as I am when I watch now. So that's definitely something I miss. I think that's really cool. It's a great point.
Nicole said, I was just listening to last week's show and I wanted to write in with a few of my thoughts. In reference to your comments about Aurora not knowing Snow, I think there is something that is being overlooked. In the tale of Sleeping Beauty, she is not raised as a royal Aurora, but as Briar Rose by the three fairies, Merryweather, Flora, and Fauna. She doesn't learn of her true identity until her birthday, upon which time she is cursed by Maleficent. So I don't find it odd that she doesn't know Snow, as she has been kept isolated from everyone and runs into Prince Philip on accident. I don't think we are going to see them have a glimmer of recognition until Snow interacts with more people in the camp. As to what happens from there, perhaps Snow will take charge. That is a really great point, and something that I hadn't really thought about before. And Laura kind of mentioned tonight when she was talking about the way that Aurora was between, you know, her pampered princess and like the Aurora in the cartoon, you know, sweeping and all that kind of stuff. So very interesting point. What do you guys think about it?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, it just, I mean, they do spin things and they do put their own little twist on it there. I mean, I felt like she did know her Prince Philip a little bit more, but I think that you're right. It could totally be that, you know, she was relatively new to being the life of a royal. So therefore she would not have to Snow before. So I think that does make total sense.
Yeah, that point helped clarify that for me because I was like, wait a minute, all the other princesses. But I guess if she was asleep during that time, which it seems like she may have been, that she wouldn't have known Snow and Charming and about how they came to power and all these other things. So it definitely makes sense and is a great point to bring up. So that basically concludes this week's podcast of Once a Bolt. Just as a reminder of where you guys can send us your feedback and comments, you can reach us at onceabolt@hypeable.com, or you can leave us any kind of comments you want in the forums or on any of the posts. We do try to read all of them. You can also catch all of the latest news on Once Upon a Time at Once Upon News, which is where Selena posts all her fantastic news articles and things. So, thank you for listening, and I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Karen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.